Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. How you doing tonight? Everybody okay? Still have all your fingers and toes? We have, there are several big topics tonight, and we're going to try to cover as many as we can. We want to start out, first of all, by inviting you to the NovaMRadio.com chat room. Just go to that website, NovaMRadio.com, if you're a founding member, and put in your username and your password. And join the fun and frivolity. It's very quick in that chat room, and a lot of fun. So maybe I'll see you in there during the breaks. This is also, let's start with something pleasant tonight, like we have Monday and Tuesday. We're doing it again tonight and then Thursday and Friday. This is day three of our Glastonbury double disc DVD giveaway. Glastonbury, of course, is the longest running music festival in the history of, history of what? The UK? The world? The universe? Rock and roll? Julian Temple, who is a film director, put together video footage from the past 30 years of the festival in England. And it, as I mentioned to you last night and the night before, it features performances by world-class musicians, interviews with big-name performers, and some of the festival goers get a chance on camera too. And all the groups you could imagine, the world-class musicians are represented. So we're giving away this week 20 of them. 20 of these double disc DVDs. And tonight, as we did Monday and Tuesday, it's going to be very simple. We'll give away four, the first four people who get the right answer to the question, who's playing the music and what's the title? That's all. Who's playing the music? And Kathy's going to play it for you, going out at the bottom of the first break here in about 6 minutes. The movie, the documentary Glastonbury, is presented by Think Film. And it chronicles, as I mentioned, the world's longest-running outdoor music festival. So, please only call if you really think you have the correct answer, because when we do this, Ian will take your call, get your correct mailing information so he can send it to you. Or maybe Ian will bring it to you. I don't know. Maybe he'll do that. Maybe he'll just bring it out to your home. Who knows? So, we'll do that in just a couple of minutes. Earlier this week, was it only Monday? I was talking about rage fatigue. And the boss's husband, that would be Shelley Drobny, wrote a blog about it today at Huffington Post. You might want to check out. I think it's also posted at the NovaMRadio.com website in Shelley's space. Since he is the boss's husband, he gets his own space, you see. You see how that works. But I read it before the program. It's very good. Shelley is getting better and better with his writing. He really is. So you might want to check that out. We still have just a stack of emails that came in as a result of my bringing up that topic of rage fatigue and what to do about it. And throughout the rest of the week, occasionally I'll work in a few. And I've got one here from... dealing with rage fatigue down under in Oz, in Australia. And this comes from Rick and Carol. They signed themselves as part of your trans-hemispheric audience. I like that, trans-hemispheric audience. Wow. Anyway, they write, Mike, this is going to reach you late because we listened to you on a time-shifted basis on podcast here in Melbourne, Australia. We are charter members of Nova M, mate. My wife and I dealt with rage fatigue by leaving the country, leaving the United States. We felt the tears of our consciences for being tax-paying cogs in the war machine. We felt the fears of the sword of Damocles hanging over our head with each news item about the latest step toward fascism the Cheney government was taking. We felt like we couldn't stop the onslaught despite our activism. So we sold our house, jumped through the bureaucratic hoops to get a work visa for Oz. I'm a hospital nurse, so I can do that. And stuffed everything we couldn't bear to give up into a shipping container. He who fights and runs away will live to fight another day. We're active in an Australian anti-nuclear group We spent last Friday passing out flyers in front of the main downtown train station alerting people about a major U.S.-Australian military maneuver called Talisman Saber that's happening now. Every chance we get, we talk to people we encounter about what's happening with the United States and warn them not to go down the American road. Aussies know what's going on, and they're more receptive to that viewpoint than most Americans. We feel like we're fighting a rearguard action in a far-flung corner of the empire, but it's a corner where we might make a bit of difference. We share your rage. We deal with it by not giving up the battle, just the battleground. Rick and Carol. And then there's this from Lou, and I'm going to tell you how you can get in touch with Lou at his website, Lou's Views. It's L-E-W, L-E-W-S, lousviews.com. Lou writes, Mike, I'm a 75-year-old father of six, grandfather of 23, and great-grandfather of seven, with three of them under 4 months old. I spent 38 months of my young life flying around in the tail of a dilapidated B-50 bomber with an atom bomb strapped to my ass, then 20 years as a law enforcement officer in the eighth largest county in the country. I've walked away from three airplane crashes, five total automobile accidents, had viral pneumonia five times, blood poisoning three times, all in the line of duty. Along with this could be added so many weapons pulled on me that I can't even recall them all, plus two bomb attempts on my life when I was working special investigations that included outlaw bikers, religious cults, and the emerging Tim McVeigh-type nut groups. I could go on, but I'm sure you get the point. And one thing I have never learned was how to run from cowardly bastards such as we see in the fascist regime, the Congress, Blackwater, or the Gestapo-style so-called Homeland Security. Three-quarters of Americans are opposed to what is happening, but feel powerless. And though I know you have soured on this action, I still feel that consistently bombarding the Congress and news media with emails and letters to the editor and also boycotting the companies that sponsor these right-wing talking heads. I began my letter-writing campaign shortly after Bush stole the first election and have had over 200 published since then and have a blog that could help those who might want to begin their own campaign. Signed, Lou in Fayetteville, Arkansas. If you want to check out what Lou's talking about, lousviews.com, L-E-W-S, Lou's Views, V-I-E-W-S, lousviews.com. Father of six, grandfather of 23, and great-grandfather of seven. Oh, my God. And this dude's only 75? That sounds like Moses. Way to go, Lou. Thanks for the nice email. Flew a B-50 bomber with an atom bomb, and he's got strapped to my ass in quotes. Had one in the Bombay, I guess. Go to lousviews.com. Check out. This guy sounds extreme. I've gotten lots of emails from him. I think this is the first one I've read on the air. Maybe not. But Lou, it's always good to hear from you. Thank you very much. This is a great email. I hope people come to your website and check out what you're talking about. Lousviews.com. With an atom bomb strapped to my ass. Whoa, my God. Last one for this segment. Mike, is there rage fatigue among Democrats? No, there's not enough rage among liberals. If you want rage, listen to right-wing radio or to the Republican politicians. From a Republican state senator punching out his Democratic rival in the Alabama state legislature to Dick Cheney saying, go blank yourself, to Patrick Leahy on the Senate floor, to Bill O'Reilly's unhinged outburst, the Republicans wrote the book on rage. There's not enough anger on the Democratic side. Mark from Fort Worth, Texas.
Here's the song.
Here's the tune. Come up with the artist and the name of the song. Call us, 800-989-1480.
impact in the midst of the Middle East will have enormous historical impact.
There's the song. I think we have a couple of winners, but we're still looking for two more. The name of the tune and the artist. There is very little coverage on mainstream media, as there never is, about important issues regarding what happened between Hamas and al-Fatah, and the fact that the occupied territories in Palestine are now under two separate governments, two separate leaders. And there has been an awful lot of blasting of Hamas. And I think it would be fair to share with you a statement that was issued about 36 hours ago by Ahmed Youssef, who is the political advisor to Ismail Haniyeh, who became the Palestinian prime minister last year. This is fairly brief, but you're not going to hear it anywhere but here, I don't think. So here we go. This is Dateline is Gaza City today. The events in Gaza over the last few days have been described in the West as a coup. In essence, they have been the opposite. 18 months ago, our Hamas party won the Palestinian parliamentary elections and entered office under Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh, but never received the handover of real power from Fatah, the losing party. The Palestinian president, Mahmoud Abbas, has now tried to replace the winning Hamas government with one of his own, returning Fatah to power while many of our elected members of parliament languish in Israeli jails. That is the real coup. From the day Hamas won the general election in 2006, it offered Fatah the chance of joining forces and forming a unity government. It tried to engage the international community to explain its platform for peace. It has consistently offered a 10-year ceasefire with the Israelis to try to create an atmosphere of calm in which we resolve our differences. Hamas even adhered to a unilateral ceasefire for 18 months in an effort to normalize the situation on the ground. None of these points appear to have been recognized in the press coverage of the last few days. Nor has it been evident to many people in the West that the civil unrest in Gaza and the West Bank has been precipitated by the American and Israeli policy of arming elements of the Fatah opposition who want to attack Hamas and forces from office. For 18 months, we have tried to find ways to coexist with Fatah, entering into a unity government, even conceding key positions in the cabinet to their and international demands, negotiating up until the last moment to try to provide security for all of our people on the streets of Gaza. Sadly, it became apparent that not all officials from Fatah were negotiating in good faith. There were attempts on Mr. Haniyeh's life last week, and eventually we were forced into trying to take control of a very dangerous situation in order to provide political stability and establish law and order. The streets of Gaza are now calm for the first time in a very long time. We have begun disarming some of the drug dealers and the armed gangs, and we hope to restore a sense of security and safety to the citizens of Gaza. We want to get children back to school, get basic services functioning again, and provide long-term economic gains for our people. Our stated aim when we won the election was to effect reform, end corruption, and bring economic prosperity to our people. Our sole focus is Palestinian rights and good governance. We now hope to create a climate of peace and tranquility within our community that will pave the way for an end to internal strife and bring about the release of British journalist Alan Johnston, whose kidnapping in March by non-Hamas members is a stain on the reputation of the Palestinian people. We reject attempts to divide Palestine into two parts and to pass Hamas off as an extreme and dangerous force. We continue to believe that there is still a chance to establish a long-term truce, but this will not happen unless the international community fully engages with Hamas. Any further attempts to marginalize us, starve our people into submission, or attack us militarily will prove that the United States and Israeli governments are not genuinely interested in seeing an end to the violence. Dispassionate observers over the next few weeks will be able to make up their own minds as to each side's true intentions. A statement from Ahmed Youssef, political advisor to Palestinian Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh. And when we come back after the break, we will have Israel's answer. It does not come in the form of a statement. It comes in the form of action. Some of it good, some of it bad. But Hamas, the statement was in the New York Times today, but unless you are a subscriber to the New York Times, you would have no idea that the statement even existed. Stay with us. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Behind every door, the not-looking people to kill or to maim. The soldiers of peace are just changing the game. Fighting for all of our lives, and now fighting for children.
Salam shalom, peace, salam shalom, peace, salam shalom, peace, salam shalom, peace, salam shalom.
The second pillar of peace and security in our world is the willingness of free nations to retain aggression and evil by force.
God, he has no idea what he's saying, and he can't read. Okay, stop a second. All right, we have our winners, the Wednesday night Glastonbury DVD winners, Robert in Phoenix, Jock in Kyle, Texas, Stephen in Rancho Palos Verdes, California. And joining us on the phone, Mary in Bethesda, Maryland, who also went. Hey, Mary.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing good. What was the title and the author?
The group's Coldplay, and the song is Don't Panic.
That's
title.
right. Hey, let me ask you something.
Sure.
Way off topic, way out in left field for this program. What do you think of Coldplay?
I love them.
Do you?
They are fantastic. And, you know, for a long time, they've really been taking a lead in the fair trade movement. And I know several years ago on their website, I don't know if they still have it, they just started put up a new website just in the last week or so. They also were doing a part of a program for reforestation in different parts of the world. And you could donate, you know, a fund to plant a tree and... So I think they're great. I love the music, and I think they, kind of know what's going on in the world. They're very cognizant of a lot of really important issues in the world.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because that's kind of my take on them, too. Mary, thanks. Congratulations.
Sure. Thanks for everything, and this has been fun. And, Kathy, great selections. And just a line from that song is, we live in a beautiful world, and I hope we stay that way. A little flicker of hope for the future.
I hear that. Thanks, Mary.
Thanks, Mike.
All right.
All right.
Take care. Take care. That is kind of a fun way to start the program every night. We'll do it again tomorrow and Friday. Now, I read to you the statement by the Palestinian or the advisor. His name is Ahmed Youssef. He is the political advisor to Ismail Haniyeh, who became the Palestinian prime minister last year when Hamas won the democratically set up elections. One more thing I want to share with you here. This comes from CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation News, Avi Lewis, who writes for them, blogs for them. And thanks to Malachi for sending this to me. This is what Avi Lewis, how he takes a look at what happened in between Hamas and Fatah. He writes, once in a while a phrase gets launched into the news cycle and all of a sudden it's bobbing up everywhere. And when that happens, it's worth yanking it out and holding it up to some closer scrutiny. So last week when Hamas took over the Gaza Strip and I started hearing it described as a coup d'etat, I immediately thought, can we get some translation here, please? After Hamas ended weeks of fighting by seizing control of Gaza, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas dismissed Prime Minister Ismail Haniyeh and the whole Hamas-led cabinet. He then appointed a so-called emergency government with a new Western-friendly prime minister, former IMF representative Salam Fayyad. Here's the problem. Whatever you think of Hamas, its insistence on armed resistance, its refusal to formally recognize Israel, it just happens to have won a huge electoral victory a year and a half ago, making it the legitimate choice of a Palestinian majority. Since day one, the U.S., Canada, and Israel have refused to recognize the existence of the Hamas government, have instituted a financial embargo, denied funding, and financial embargo and funding, arming and training the Presidential Guard, of Fatah's security force. Democratic processes have not exactly been the priority. Now, according to the Palestinian Basic Law, the effective constitution, Abbas can legally fire the prime minister. But if he does, the serving cabinet, in this case the Hamas-led cabinet, is supposed to govern until a new one is appointed by the legislature. The facts on the ground are that Abbas dismissed an elected government and appointed a new one without a legitimate basis. And Western powers, who had been starving the elected government for months, leapt to embrace the Abbas one. Well, that looks an awful lot like, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, yeah, a coup. I've never heard of Bobby Lewis, but I have now. Well, the Likud, the Israeli military, responded today. Israel fired missiles and sent tanks into Gaza today, killing four Palestinians. The Associated Press calls it the deadliest military action since Hamas militants took control of Gaza. At the same time, Israel allowed in to Israel a few sick and wounded Palestinians of the hundreds of people who fled the violence, with many holed up for days at a fetid border crossing with Gaza. Mahmoud Abbas, the moderate Palestinian president, harshly criticized Hamas for its takeover of Gaza last week, referring to members of the group as murderous terrorists. Despite the turmoil, Abbas said peace talks with Israel should resume and appealed for international help in conveying and convening a peace conference. A UN agency, meanwhile, warned of general food shortages in Gaza within weeks if the main cargo crossing with Israel isn't reopened. The UN World Food Program, meanwhile, began bringing in 225 tons of food into Gaza through Israel, in addition to 200 tons of food and medical supplies it sent in yesterday. The World Food Program director in the Palestinian territory said, quote, there's a serious humanitarian crisis developing in Gaza as a result of recent turmoil and the closure of the border crossings, end quote. So we'll see what happens. But just remember, and you and I should remember this, that people around the planet, especially in the Middle East, where George W. Bush is trying to present himself as the Messiah of some sort, or the Messiah's brother, bringing democracy and fair play and wonderful stuff to all these oppressed peoples. Of course, he's not trying to bring it to the oppressed peoples in Saudi Arabia, or the oppressed peoples in Egypt, or the oppressed people in Jordan, or the oppressed peoples in Kuwait. But anyway, as George Bush presents himself as the Messiah's brother, the rest of us should be cognizant of this. Those people who are listening to America's message of democracy, who then make an attempt at it, as the Palestinians do, and come up with the result, as the Palestinians did, and then see the result totally trashed by three or four of the world's leading democracies, the UK, the US, Canada, and Israel. There is a lesson that the oppressed peoples of the Middle East are learning, along with the bombs and the missiles and the destruction and the blown up children and the decimated cities and no power and no electricity and their country becoming a failed state. The people in Iraq have learned a great lesson. Democracy sucks. Democracy equals death. Democracy equals dislocation. Democracy equals running for the borders. So I think, regardless of your feelings about Hamas, Fatah, the IDF, the U.S. government, the U.K., the territories, the concentration camps, the bombing, you know, regardless of your feelings about all of that, shouldn't we rein in an out of control nutcase like George W. Bush, who talks democracy and then when it's applied tries to strangle it in its crib? Yeah, I think so. Speaking of things in the crib like children, the Times today talking about toys. Do you realize how many toys for the world are made in China? In the United States, toys made in China make up 70-80% of all the toys sold in the United States. Can you believe this? I thought it was more like 90%, but there we are, 70-80% of the toys. What are the Chinese doing? You know, I'm really getting sick of the Chinese, aren't you? Huh? China manufactured every one of the 24 kinds of toys recalled for safety reasons in the U.S. so far this year, including that enormously popular Thomas and Friends, the wooden train sets. Molly used to watch that. She kind of grew up. But Thomas the Train, that's a British, doesn't that come from the U.K.? The latest recall announced last week involves 1.5 million Thomas and Friends trains and rail components sold in the U.S. over the past 2 years by a corporation based in Oak Brook, Illinois, the RC2 Corporation, Oak Brook, Illinois. The toys were coated at a factory in China with lead paint, which, you know this, damages brain cells, especially in children. So what's being done about it? Or you're going to be surprised. Stick around. I'll tell you coming back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Senators and lawyers.
The quality of mercy is not safe.
Big songs and heroes.
The quality of mercy is not safe.
Murderers and martyrs. The quality of mercy is not safe.
You're listening to Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Break my stride. Make me
10 before the hour. So the Chinese just have absolutely no sense of decency. They send poison into the entire world. Stuff that kills people. Stuff in toothpaste and cough medicine and toys. And dog food and cat food and God knows what else. Last month there was a ghoulish fake eyeball toy that was made in China. It was recalled after it was found to be filled with kerosene. Jesus God! Sets of toy drums and a toy bear were recalled because of lead paint, and an infant wrist rattle was recalled because it was a choking hazard.
But they had to use kerosene. They ran battery acid. What is wrong with these people?
These sons of bitches. Whoops, I'm not supposed to cuss. The toy trains and railroad pieces are made directly for this Oak Brook, Illinois, U.S. company, RC2, at plants that the company oversees in China. So, you know, we can push this off on the Chinese. But what about the American overseers who sit there and we don't know. We don't know what's going on. You would think that would give the company some control over the safety of the toys that are made there. Stacey Rubenstein, a spokeswoman for RC2, declined yesterday to comment on safety control measures at company plants in China. The Toy Industry Association, which it's a lobbying group that represents American toy companies and importers, also declined to comment. The attitude there from RC2 and the toy industry is, screw your children. We don't care. Let the little bastards die. We don't care. We're talking profit here. Scott Wolfson, who's a Consumer Product Safety Commission spokesman, a Bush appointee, I'm sure, he wouldn't say how long ago the American company discovered the problem or when it first reported it to federal authorities. Nobody's going to talk. Nobody in the Bush administration regulatory agency, nobody for the Toy Association lobbying group, nobody for the company that brings this garbage into the United States. You see, in the past 2 years, the staff of the Consumer Product Safety Commission has been cut by over 10%, leaving fewer regulators to monitor the safety of this growing flood of imports from, places like China, where they make false eyes filled with kerosene for your children. Some consumer advocates, according to the New York Times, say that such staff cuts under the Bush administration have made the Consumer Product Safety Commission a lax regulator. The commission, for example, acknowledged in a recent budget document that, quote, because of resource limitations, end quote, it was planning next year to curtail its efforts aimed at preventing children from drowning in swimming pools and bathtubs. Do you understand this, truth seeker? Do you understand what these Bush thugs have done? They have assassinated the United States of America. They have killed us. Rage fatigue? The toy industry in the United States is largely self-policed. Why, of course. That way they can bring in toys covered with lead paint to give your child, let me think for a minute, autism? The Consumer Product Safety Commission has safety standards. Oh, sure, they're on the books. Just like the EPA. Just like the FDA. They're all on the books. But the word from the Bush crime family was, don't enforce anything. We're pro-life. But you see, the CPSC, Consumer Product Safety Commission, only has about 100 field investigators. And what they have to do is inspect ports, warehouses, and stores that hold $22 billion worth of toys and tens of billions of dollars worth of other consumer products sold in the country each year, the vast majority of which at this point appears to be coming from our Chinese friends. A spokeswoman for Consumers Union, a good group, urged parents to sign up for the Consumer Product Safety Commission's automated notification system at the commission's website. You see, they will put a little announcement out there. It's cpsc.gov, cpsc.gov. That way you can stay on top of which toys are being recalled before your child eats one and ingests kerosene or lead paint or poison wheat gluten that's filled with chemicals, or toothpaste that is full of ethylene glycol, which is a component to antifreeze. I mean, the Chinese don't even, these scum suckers don't even put on a front that they're making honest, legitimate products. They don't care. And the American corporations, these dirty rat bastard corporations who set up their factories. Can you imagine an American company in this day and age putting a product out there, an American company that has a factory here covered with lead paint or a fake eyeball full of kerosene? No, you can't imagine it because it wouldn't happen. but let them get out of this country, whether they go to China or the Mariana Islands or Mexico or some godforsaken crap hole in the Mideast, and set up their factories like, oh, I don't know, how about Jordan? Where nobody watches, nobody cares, and the American corporations send one of their pigs out to these different countries to, quote, oversee, end quote, what is being manufactured and sent back to the United States. And then what? Maybe your kid will die. And everybody will be, you know, like, all sorry. Just in from our correspondent, Sheila. First of all, welcome back to the program. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. Sheila writes, opposition opposition leader and Likud chairman Benjamin Netanyahu is on his way to the United States. Uh-oh. The headline says, Netanyahu departs for the U.S. in bid to increase pressure on Iran. It is written by Barak Ravid, Haaretz correspondent. And very quickly, it just says opposition leader and Likud chairman Benjamin Netanyahu on Tuesday will embark, that was yesterday, for the U.S. on a visit aimed at increasing financial sanctions against Iran in order to get that country to drop its nuclear program. Okay, so far so good. You know, if that's what you want to do, but get this. During his visit, Netanyahu is slated to meet a New York State financial official asking him to withdraw or freeze hundreds of millions of dollars the state pension funds have invested in Iran. What? We're investing in Hitler's great Satan's minions of hell, demons? Oh my goodness. Netanyahu, here comes the good part. Netanyahu will then arrive in Washington, where he will meet for talks on the Iranian issue with Vice President Dick Cheney, Democratic Party presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton, and Republican Party presidential hopeful Fred Thompson. Thompson? Has he entered anything? Isn't he just an actor? The Likud chairman, Benjamin Netanyahu, was recently involved in Florida's state assembly passing a law sanctioning investments in Iran. I certainly don't like that. Do you? The leader of a foreign political party coming to the United States and a right-wing neo-fascist political party to boot, coming to the United States and negotiating or threatening various state legislatures or state pension funds to withdraw any and all investments or support it might give to another foreign country. There's something about that that really stinks, especially when you consider where the pressure's coming from. Benjamin Netanyahu? How many times has this guy had the stake pulled out of his chest? How many times is he going to reincarnate himself? He, you see, wants to be, once they get rid of Olmert, Netanyahu wants another crack at it. My God. I don't like Benjamin Netanyahu. I never have. And he's meeting with Hillary Clinton, not Barack Obama, not Mitt Romney, not John Edwards, not John McCain, Hillary Clinton, and Fred Thompson. What the hell? Oh, my God. All right. The other big story today, I think, is what Bush has done about vetoing for the second time stem cell research bill. This is his third veto, twice on stem cell research, federally funded stem cell research, and setting a deadline to get our people out of the killing machine that has become Iraq thanks to Bush. Now, before we jump to the gun and say, or jump the gun and say Bush is pro-disease and he wants people to suffer because Jesus suffered on the cross, don't forget, Bush is no more of a Christian than I am. He just uses that against the terminally stupid who raise their hands to heaven and thank their Lord and Savior for a good Christian man like George W. Bush. Killer, liar, sneak, and cheat that he is. No. Bush is not, Bush probably wants all the benefits from medical research, but he just wants it to be done by the private sector. That's all. Where there can be graft and payoff and lobbyists and money and profits, and then the private sector, you see, can charge exorbitant amounts for people who are suffering from terrible diseases in order to give them the cure. It has naught to do with Bush's moral stance. That's bull hockey. That's Bush the liar. That's Bush the fraud. That's the normal Bush. It has to do with turning it over to the private sector. You see, you can't stop corporate America from doing stem cell research now, can you? Alyssa writes, Mike, I feel selfish because stem cell research is minor in the crimes of Bush, but because it affects me, it is major. I was diagnosed with MS 7 years ago. Thinking about all the stuff I've gone through since then, from losing my vision for a while to seizures to pain that came close to labor pain, and worse, my thinking, my cognitive abilities, I spend most of my time looking for things or trying to remember what I was looking for and all the progress that could have been made if it wasn't for Bush. He slapped me in the face again today with his second veto. I mean, on top of that, he has turned insurance companies into branches of his crime family. My taxes have to go up. He has done nothing for me or anyone like me. I feel selfish with the war and all his crimes. This is minor, but when a disease eats away at my brain, my ability to think, it seems like almost everything. It is everything, Alyssa. It is everything. God, I hate this man. I mean, it's just astonishing. This came from B. Green. Bush again vetoed stem cell research. It should always be remembered this is only in regard to federal funding of stem cell research. Private research isn't affected. I think he is again using a certain segment of society who hold a certain belief system to hide his true intentions. I believe this veto to be preemptive privatization. The results of stem cell research are going to be huge. The corporatists in this country or this world want to keep the results of stem cell research patentable and immensely profitable. The results will come first to the biggest, most well-financed private research labs. The big pharmaceuticals want to patent, produce, and sell. Can you imagine what the value of a cure for diabetes would be worth? The big pharmaceuticals don't want to buy the license to produce some stem cell result from a federal-funded lab. Thus, the public will pay more for any results obtained. The benefits of stem cell research will come. The only question is who will own the product and how much will it cost. That's very true. Mark Zukowski, who is a doctor, a molecular geneticist, had had a blog that's making its way around. He's a PhD, making its way around the internet. He titles it Bush Stem Cell Hypocrisy. He writes, is the Bush administration's opposition to stem cell research genuinely based on so-called moral grounds? Or are there arguments a cover as he slyly shifts federal research to big pharma? While cloaked in pious phraseology, the Bush administration aims to outsource basic research on embryonic stem cells, work that is traditionally done at universities, to the big hitters in private industry. You see, corporations are free to work on any stem cells they wish. Bush has tied the hands of federally funded research by restricting which cells can be used by government labs, but he's opened the door wide for corporate profits. In August 2001, Bush announced that he would allow federal funding only for research on about 60 stem cell lines that existed at the time. Researchers have since found that many of those lines are contaminated and unusable. Bush has now vetoed the Stem Cell Research Enhancement Act, a bill that would allow federal funding of stem cells that are derived from embryos that would otherwise be discarded from in vitro fertility clinics. This will be the second time that Bush has vetoed a bill for federal funding of embryonic stem cell research. Zukowski has a little more to say here, and I'll share it with you when we come back.
My heart and thumb, my hand. Why don't people understand my
issue that speaks to morality and science and the juxtaposition of the both.
You little weasel. You disgusting little weasel. Back to Mark Zukowski's comments today on Bush's stem cell hypocrisy. Mark Zukowski is a PhD molecular geneticist. He goes on to say, while much of the public debate is focused on purported moral and ethical issues about the use of embryonic stem cells, an important part of the debate has been largely ignored in public forums. Bush's restrictions have no effect on private funding of stem cell research or state funding of stem cell research. California voters passed a ballot initiative in 2004 to provide $3 billion in funding for stem cell research at California universities and research institutions in an effort to get around the ban on federal funding. Unfortunately, litigation has stalled the use of these funds. However, private companies are free to pursue embryonic stem cell research from embryos that would otherwise be discarded or from cell cultures derived from such embryos. The current administration, the Bush crime family, is quietly shifting federal research responsibilities to the private sector while vociferously distracting the public with arguments of morality. Most basic research scientists are at academic institutions, and they receive the majority of their funding from federal sources, such as the National Institutes of Health. They are forbidden from working with embryonic stem cells, but such research should be open to all investigators. It is clear that the Bush administration has little interest in furthering scientific exploration with federal funds. The shift and distract approach of moving embryonic stem cell research to the private sector, while trumpeting moral and ethical concerns, will only impede critical research needed to develop therapies for many costly and devastating diseases. Mark Zukowski, PhD, molecular geneticist. God, I hate these people. Oh, well. Oh, by the way, we need to point something out here. This is the this is Midsummer's Eve. Did you know that? Tomorrow's the summer solstice. Thanks to Bridget for pointing this out. I can't believe, Kathy, it just slipped. And we have two fairy dwellings. Actually, we have three. We have one that's a fairy doorway that you put on a tree. And I've been waiting for the proper time to take Molly out and ask a tree if we can put that fairy dwelling door on it. Bridget reminds me that it's Midsummer's Eve. And also, from Midsummer Night's Dream, a play in which I played the part of Theseus, there were two marriages, two wedding feasts going on, more or less. There was one wedding feast, but there were two marriages, Oberon and Titania, the king and queen of the fairies, and Theseus and Hippolyta. Theseus being the general who had retired, and Hippolyta being the former head of the Amazonian women. And at the end of the play, the sprite, Puck, makes a little closing statement. Shakespeare occasionally had the habit of having one of the characters make a closing, especially in his comedies, making a closing statement. And Bridget was nice enough to send it to me. And we'll share it with you when we come back. I'm just astonished that I let that get past me. Oh, well. If you hear tonight when you go to sleep or when you bed down, wherever you sleep, whether you sleep indoors or outdoors, when you go to sleep tonight, if you hear, little rustlings and stirrings, it is probably the fairies moving around. Somebody just tuning into the program has never heard the program now is going, what the hell is this guy talking about? Is this what liberal talk radio is about? Fairies? Well, kinda. Fairies and demons. I like the fairies part, and the Bush crime family provides all the demons and haints and ugly spirits that we could possibly try to stay up with, right? Stick around. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
What news would you bring of voices in the sky? Voices in the sky.
Sometimes get encapsulated in a bubble.
Those are the days, right? 25 before the hour. Clifford in Kentfield, California, just sent me a quickie here. Good news, the California court recently took care of all the litigation regarding stem cell research, and the stem cell money is finally flowing. That's good. This is Midsummer's Eve, and on this day, somewhere in the 15th century, I guess, the Midsummer Night's Dream occurred. God, that was a good play. Oh, I love that play, and I love The Tempest, although they're in entirely different tones and. But Midsummer Night's Dream, if you get a chance to see it done, go. Now, at the very end, when everybody has fallen asleep, kind of drunk themselves into a stupor, I guess, at the end of the all the fun and frivolity, Puck, the little imp, the sprite, the fairy, the spirit, the mischief maker. You know, in Midsummer, in The Tempest, you had Ariel. In Midsummer Night's Dream, you have Puck. So Puck comes out and surveys all the sleeping partygoers and then addresses the audience and says the following. If we shadows have offended, think but this and all is mended, that you have but slumbered here, and this weak and idle theme, no more yielding but a dream. Gentles, do not reprehend. If you pardon, we will mend. And as I am an honest Puck, if we have unearned luck now to scrape the serpent's tongue, we will make amends ere long, else the Puck a liar call. So good night unto you all. Give me your hands, if we be friends, and Robin shall restore amends. Give me your hands, of course, means to applaud. Which I didn't know until I was fortunate enough to have done that play 35 years ago. God, it's a great play. Anyway, thanks to Bridget for sending this in. This is Midsummer's Eve. Tomorrow is the summer solstice. So if you celebrate that, blessed be, and merry meet, and merry meet again, and on and on and on. And for those of us who don't really celebrate it, although I did celebrate Midsummer's Eve twice in my life. And it was this powerful ritual. If you find your Wiccan friends and get together, just if you know some Wiccan people, call them up and ask them if they're going to do anything tomorrow, and they'll invite you. See, there I go again, just drifting off into things that make sense. Yes.
Ground control to Major Tom.
Thanks, Kathy.
We have some calls here.
Oh, that's right. I know. I'm terribly sorry. I just, you know. Oh, and by the way, if you are interested in fairies and wee folk, I've mentioned this website before. You ought to check it out. If nothing else, just to trip on by and look. But go to Bridget's website. She and John have a website. It's Fairy Woodland.com. And you can see some fairly amazing things there. Fairywoodland.com. It's pretty hard to get all pissed off and insane when you're putting up a fairy house. It really is. If you want to avoid rage fatigue, I would love, I swear to God, I think it would be great fun. I think John, who is one of the two artists who put these incredible artistic compositions together, these fairy houses, he's figured it out, man. He has really figured it out. So is Bridget, for that matter. But John will work on these fairy houses, and I met John. I met him in Sacramento, and it's a good way to just calm down. Fairywoodland.com. Check it out. All right, this is talk radio, right? Let's do some phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. All right, let's talk with Chris, who's calling in from Toronto, because Chris wants to solve our problems. Is that right, Chris?
Oh, I'm feeling magnanimous today, so I thought I'd give you a ding.
All right, well, let's do it.
Well, you guys have been all doing the research and the hearings and all that down in your State Department and mm-hmm. all the other forms you've got for it, and I was just wondering why you're going to all the bother. I mean, yeah, you got people under oath and all that, but don't you just want the information out there and available? I mean, being under oath and all is convenient, but you want the information, right?
Well, yeah, essentially, basically.
So why don't you ask your nice friends, the Canadians and the British and the French, if they'll talk to you, their intelligence gathering apparatus, which have been tracking everything the Bush regime has been doing for the last God knows how long. Right. I'm sure somebody has a really big file that they just love to dump in somebody's lap who do something with it. Because it would be really convenient to those countries, I think, to have old Bush done something with.
But diplomacy, don't you know? I mean, so many of these civilized countries, like the handful you just mentioned, while their governments may be a little bit odd, they still subscribe to some form of civilized discourse, and part of that includes not dumping the truth on an unsuspecting population. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, but you've burnt all your bridges and cut all your hay with, you know, many of these former allies. So there is no diplomacy. Hell, there's not even a channel anymore between a lot of our agreements. I mean, I've looked at our relations over the last 5 or 6 years of this Bush administration, and I can't find a single treaty that Bush and et al. Have not violated egregiously.
You're right.
So what possible consequence are we looking at? Oh, you're going to violate NAFTA again? No, that couldn't happen. You're going to put duties on our softwood lumber? No, that'll never happen. You know, really, there's no consequences anymore because there's no diplomacy anymore.
Well,
it's the same thing with justice. You eliminate justice, you give people vengeance. That's all they've got. If you don't give them a justice system, they have vigilantism, and it applies to the little stuff like, attorney generals and to states.
I am rather speechless.
I mean, really, what could you do to us? You could invade us. Well, we saw how well you did that in Iraq, didn't you? And with who? Oh, dear God, all those people who want our health care. You sure you're not sending an occupying force and not just emigrating?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're going to shoot us. Well, what are we going to do? We're going to offer you health care, food, you know, free lodging, education.
You know, it must be awfully sporting to live in a country where things are still reasonably sane and to call the talk show host south of the border and point out what he's dealing with. And you're able to hang up and just go about your business.
Well, you're having that moment of zen with the fairy woodlands and the, you know, right. The Wiccan ceremonies.
Right.
And, you know, I was sort of pushing you back towards the pissed off rage.
Well, you did a good job, Chris.
You're welcome, certainly
did a good job.
What are neighbors for?
That's very true. Thank you, Chris.
You're welcome. Good evening, Mike.
Appreciate you checking in. Damn. Yeah, I get emails like that from some of our listeners in Australia and the UK, surprisingly, you know, that say essentially the same thing. But people in the UK have no room to talk. You know, there's Tony Blair is just as much of a neo-fascist as Bush. But anyway, thanks, Chris. That was very, very heartening of you. You know, just for a moment, I untether this steel chain, or myself from this steel chain and ball, and float off into fairy woodland, and I get a call from Canada that says, no, no, come back. Back to your phone calls. Ron is calling from Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
All right. I just wanted to call and tell you how great it is to listen to somebody that feels the same way I do. I've been listening to you for about, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years, something like that.
Well, thank you.
And, you know, it's just, it's so frustrating, you know, living in Columbus and Ohio where, you know, that definitely the election was stolen. You can just tell by all you got to do is look through the figures of the voting results.
Sure.
And they just by the way, yeah, have you heard anything about Blackwell since he got beat? You know, he's gone. He did his job. He's gone.
I don't. Well, what's he doing now? He's probably working someplace. The Carlyle Group, the Bush administration.
Probably. That's what I'm thinking. So yeah. He's probably in Dubai or whatever.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
But anyway, I just appreciate you and you know, at least I've got to listen to somebody that I can relate to.
Well, thanks, Ron. I appreciate that very much. Your phone call is it's very nice. Thank you. I appreciate it. I wish we were on a radio station in Columbus. We're on Sirius, of course. You can pick it up in Columbus. But we'll be back in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NOVAM Radio.
Or should we blame the images on TV?
No, blame Canada! Blame Canada! You saw their beady little eyes, a black and handsome full of lies.
Blame Canada!
To form a full assault.
even a real country anyway.
My son could have been a doctor or a lawyer, rich and true. Instead, he burned up like a piggy on a barbecue.
Should we blame the matches? Should we blame the fire? Or the doctors who allowed it to expire?
Heck no!
Blame Canada! Blame Canada!
To the great white north, take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off. To the great white north.
Hey, Jose.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, listen to this, it's coming. You know what it is?
What?
It's a drum solo.
Okay, everyone, like, this is me on the drums.
Oh,
eh?
Get out. It is not.
It
You're
is
not.
So.
Stop.
I learned, will you?
Take off, eh?
Oh.
Time before the hour. Thanks to all our listeners in the Great White North. We just love you. What, we have three of them on the line? Oh, my God. All right, let's do it. Tom is calling from Canoga. No, that's California. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah, yesterday I was listening to you read those messages from people who are kind of depressed.
Yeah.
And you know,
they're not really depressed. They just have rage fatigue. They're sick of being enraged.
Yeah, and I get that way, too.
Right.
But, you know, when you watch Henry Waxman, and he's, like, raging against the fascism, and he's the bulldog, you can thank me, because I put him in office again and again, and Barbara Boxer, too. And we Californians, you know, when you think California, we're the definition of liberal. We're not going to let the rest of the country go down the tubes. We're going to be there.
Well.
And you know, Henry Waxman, you know, he's not much to look at, I agree, but he's, when I watch him in action, he's great, you know, and Barbara Boxer.
Well, what about Arnold?
I don't know about Arnold. I don't even think about him.
Yeah,
he's like in a different time zone. I don't even know. I don't know about him.
Well, he's right down there in.
I didn't vote for him, Mike.
You did. All right. Okay.
No, but and I didn't vote for Feinstein either last time. She's my other senator. You know why I didn't vote for her?
Because she is part of the military-industrial complex.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She was part of the intelligence committee, and I found out she knew that intelligence leading up to the war was wrong. And as soon as I found that out, she was off my list of people to vote for.
I
had always voted for her before. So it's little bits of information like that. That's a pretty significant one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, hey, I get an email every couple of weeks telling me how my representatives voted. It's this thing called Mega Vote. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes, I have.
It's great.
Yes.
You find out exactly how they voted on all the issues, and it's, and you just type Mega Vote into Google, and it'll lead you to that. But I have a question for you, Mike.
Yes.
Have you ever wondered why some Democrats in Congress, they say one thing and then they vote a different way, or they change their mind at the last minute?
Well, you know, I woke up at 4 this morning wondering exactly that.
I think I know why.
Tell me.
I think their offices are being bugged. I think Bush knows what they're talking about. He has an end around. You know how he loves bugging.
Yeah,
he begged us. He begged us for the right to bug.
That's
true. Remember that?
Yes. And he does it.
And he right to bug.
And he does it anyway. He's the imperial president. He doesn't need anybody's permission. You may be onto something.
And I'm wondering if, see, the Dems never, they never give me the impression that they even know that. Sure, they know what they're facing is fascism, but they don't even realize, I don't think they even realize that he's doing an end around. He knows what they're thinking. And maybe some of them are actually being blackmailed. Maybe some of them are. And maybe that's the reason, because I can't believe that all of them, you know, Harry Reid should have been able to get all those Dems together. Why doesn't he?
But Tom, maybe they are just politicians. Because they have a D after their names, that does not make them heroic. That doesn't make them honest. It doesn't make them willing to stand up for truth and justice.
Maybe I have a more positive view because my contact, Henry Waxman, he votes he votes exactly the way I want him to vote.
Well, some of them,
every damn time.
Some of them, I'm sure that have a D behind their name. Are all those good and wonderful things that we would expect all Democrats to be, but not all Democrats are. Two words, Hillary Clinton. I mean, it just goes on and on. There are lots of Democrats who don't give a damn about the country or the people of the country or health care or real national security, which is don't go bomb someone else's country and set up a nest of terrorism.
Are you saying their constituents don't talk to them? They just ignore.
Oh, they may talk to the constituents, but it's all lies and deception.
Because they're being blackmailed.
But please don't ever think, Tom, that because a politician has a D after his or her name, that they represent truth, justice, and the American way. That is absolutely not the case, and you know it as well as I do. There are Democrats who are scum, who are worse than scum. We used to have one here that represented us as a senator for a while, Zell Miller. I'll tell you another one. How about Joe Lieberman? So, just because a politician says, I'm a Democrat, or I'm a member of the Democratic Party, means nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I have rage fatigue, too, but I guess it never gets as deep as other people because I have these representatives who really do my bidding for me. And I guess that's even more unique than I thought, huh, Mike?
Yes, it is. You're very fortunate, and good on you for that. Tom, I got to leave it there. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Mike, bye.
All right, appreciate it. Take care. See, all these people that you said were calling from Canada, no, that's California, Kathy.
I need some stem cells.
Yes, you do. Mike is calling from San Pablo or Tablo?
Hello,
Mike? Yeah, hey, Mike, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from San Pablo, California.
San Tablo with a T?
P-A-B-L-O.
Oh, San Pablo.
Right across the bay. It's right outside Oakland, across the bay from San Francisco.
Gotcha. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I've emailed you tons of times. I'm really scared to talk. That's the way I've always been. But
what are you afraid of? Are you afraid of somebody in the Bush crime family is going to hear you and zap a death ray into your house?
No, never. I'm from Philadelphia. I've been Frank Rizzo's boys beat my head in for what I've talked about.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Mike, can you hold on?
Yes, I can.
All right. Let me put you on hold. I'm sorry to do this, but we have to take a break here. We'll come right back to Mike. And by the way, we have what? 1, 2, 3 open lines? Oh, my God. On the Malloy program? 800-989-1480. Get in here and join us. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Malloy program on Nova M Radio. Do I have someone on hold? I think I do. Yeah, Mike. But hold on a second. Hold on just a second before we go back to Mike. Because regarding the what I read about Hamas and the occupy in Gaza, I think I have a response here. Although I don't know. I'm not quite sure what Ira is responding to, but I'll read it. Ira writes, Mike, here are two exciting scenarios to consider. The subject line says, peace, patui. Mike, here are two exciting scenarios to consider. One, the neighbor in the house behind you refuses to recognize your right to live in your house. Your neighbor constantly lobs grenades over the fence, damaging your property and injuring your family. Then your neighbor gets all upset when you don't allow groceries and medical supplies to be delivered through your backyard to his backyard. Funny, if your neighbor doesn't recognize your right to be there, why would your neighbor even consider allowing you to come to his aid? Isn't this just the height of chutzpah? After the last earthquake, Iran announced that aid was welcome from all countries but Israel. So at least the Iranians aren't hypocrites. Two, read Thomas Friedman's column in the New York Times this past week on the PhD graduating class at Hebrew University. Plenty of Arabs getting PhDs there. Any Baha'is or Sufis or Zoroastrians or Meher Baba devotees getting PhDs at any Muslim universities? Or enrolled at any Muslim universities? Or allowed at any Muslim universities? Well, let's hear about it. One more. Three. Any Jews holding voting seats in parliament in any Muslim countries? Not one. Funny, there are Muslim Arabs holding voting seats in parliament in Israel. And, by the way, all the members of parliament use the same bathrooms and drink from the same water fountains. Oops. Here's another. Four. Isn't it about time the UN demanded the United States and Canada and Mexico gave all the conquered lands back to the Indians? Oh, gosh. We could go on all night. Peace and love, Ira. Well, Ira, I understand your argument here, but you're arguing something I don't think I brought up tonight. I brought up Netanyahu. I don't think my good friend Ira is a Likudnik, although he may be. Full disclosure, Ira and I used to live in the same house back in a different lifetime. Ira now lives in Florida, and I live here in Georgia. I don't think I brought up the issue of Palestinians versus Israeli Jews. And I freely and concede the point you made about Israeli universities containing Muslim scholars, or Arab scholars, I should say. But because we don't know how many of those Arabs are Christian or Muslim or whatever. I wonder if any Arabs are Jews. Anyway, it almost sounds like you're arguing a point that I didn't make tonight. But on another night, I would probably have made the point. So I appreciate Ira writing. By the way, Ira, Gary will be spending 3 or 4 days with me in about 10 days. Another former close friend here. Ira and Gary and a bunch of people were part of the Emory conspiracy here at Emory University in Atlanta way back in the day. And peace and love back at you, Ira. All right, now, we were talking with Mike in San Pablo, California. All right, Mike, go ahead.
Okay, passing comment on Israel. I think everybody that's been in power since Shimon Peres has been just nuts. But what I want to talk to you about, well, first off, I've been listening to you since IE America, and man,
oh my God.
I don't want to swell up your head, but you have been my hero since then. I've emailed you a whole lot.
Yeah?
I'm scared. Yeah, I'm a two-tour veteran from Vietnam.
I know who you are now. Okay.
You do?
Yeah, well, I recognize from when you said that, from your emails, yes.
My sister talked to you online, and my
yes.
grandmother was, oh, my leg.
Yes.
Yeah, but what I want to talk about is I think the most serious thing facing our country right now, and that is this damned in office, this
right.
chuckle nuts bastard. These signing statements, it's tantamount to a line item veto, which is unconstitutional. He just picks and chooses what the laws are. and he's the ultimate arbiter of what they are.
Right, and that's...
In pure definition, that's royal decree.
Right.
That is a dictator.
Plus, it happens to be, I think, it's illegal or against the law when the Congress of the United States, according to everything I've ever come to understand about the Constitution, the three co-equal branches of government that are set up to be a check and balance on each other, when the Congress, allegedly reacting to the will of the people, writes a law and the president signs it, a signing statement that says, I have the right to violate the law, is horse hockey. That's like saying, you know, that's like my walking into a bank here. You know, I could use a couple hundred grand. I walk into a bank and have the teller a note that says, I have a right to hold up this bank because I need the money.
Do you know who wrote the first signing statement? First signing statement came from John Adams. And it came all the way to Bill Clinton. And none of them that have they have been written, and they have had no real influence. They have been just a seed of thought.
Right.
But until, I mean, Clinton wrote 115 of them, but they have never. They have just sort of an inference, a suggestion.
Right. It was an idea that right.
Until this weak-ass, nothing Congress. I mean, Congress could have gone on vacation for the first 6 years of Bush's administration. We didn't need them.
That's true.
Until George Bush, not a one of these signing statements has been taken seriously and put into law by a federal agency. This bastard is a dictator. And, I mean, I'm going to go right out on a limb and go for my gut. This guy should be convicted of high treason, taken out in the center of the country, I believe is somewhere in Missouri or something.
Now, be careful.
And hanged.
Ah, don't say that.
Well, no, hanged.
No, what he should...
He
should be impeached. No, I think he should be impeached and turned over to a war crimes tribunal in The Hague.
I think there is a federal death sentence for treason.
Well...
I want it to be done legally.
I hear what you're saying.
And I want to watch.
But his crimes against the people of the United States have been monumental, but his crimes against the rest of the world have been just absolutely off the chart.
Almost a million dead?
I hear you.
That doesn't deserve some kind of punishment? Really severe? And look, I'm not advocating anything that's outside the law. I want him convicted within the law and done with.
I understand.
I'm not a seditionist. I want it done legally.
I understand. All right. Thanks, Mike.
I'm scared to talk, you know.
I hear you. Thanks, Mike. Take care. Take care.
I believe in what we got. Make cowboy disease.
Cowboy disease. All right. Stick around. More to come. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Dad sells the throwaway keys. The symptoms of mad cowboy could lead to travesties. But lying just to justify, mom, will you please? Mad cowboy can be fatal, can make you paranoid, can make you maladjusted, a person to avoid. You rave against the terrorists, then murder like they do. You even claim the peaceniks terrorizing you. Your old friends and allies you'll see as enemies. It's mighty freaking dangerous, mad cowboy disease. Mad cowboy disease, mad cowboy disease. You won't find me funny when they go on killing sprees. Mad cowboy disease, mad cowboy disease. Please put them all in panic cells and throw away the keys.
The moment you wake and leave the house in the morning, the terrorists or Democrats strike without warning. So to your back seat in bed, wear a bucket on your head. That's what I said.
This is Laura Pigglesbush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
You won't need any eye holes, they'll just tell us what we see. We're being led by
21 past the hour. email here from KCM Wilson in our chat room. This would be Kim. And he's a founding member. Kim is. He's also a founding member of VeteransAgainstTorture.com and VeteransForPeace.org. Kim writes, here's a little blurb about what we're planning for this weekend. I try to do something every day to end this madness, often as little an action as an email or a call to somebody in power, other times more in your face, like sit-ins at politicians' offices, demonstrations at recruiters' offices, etc. If anyone is in Oregon close enough to Eugene to come to this action this weekend, I invite them to join us. Usually these eyes wide open exhibits are done indoors, which tend to limit this information to only those who want to see it. This time, we are doing it in the middle of the city. All those boots, all those dead. And this weekend, we're taking it to the public. A new exhibit on the human and economic costs of the Iraq War to Oregon. Eyes Wide Open will be on display at Ken Kesey Plaza, Willamette and Broadway in Eugene, Oregon, June 22nd through the 24th. The exhibit consists of a memorial to those who have lost their lives in the Iraq War, including boots to honor the fallen soldiers from Oregon, and a display that recognizes the 655,000 Iraqis estimated by the Johns Hopkins University's Bloomberg School of Public Health to have died in Iraq because of war-related cases or causes since coalition forces arrived in March 2003. The exhibit also features an interactive display on the cost of the war to Oregon. The public will have the opportunity to view the exhibit and participate in readings of the names of the fallen. That's June 22nd. That's this Friday. June 23rd, this Saturday. June 24th, this Sunday. And the exhibit opens every day at 10 o'clock in the morning. Ken Kesey Plaza, Broadway, and Willamette. And it's hosted by the Community Alliance of Lane County, the Justice Not War Coalition, and others. The statewide tour is sponsored by the American Friends Service Committee, Military Families Speak Out, Oregon, and Veterans for Peace, Chapter 72. So check it out if you are in the Eugene, Oregon area. Eyes Wide Open. This weekend, Ken Kesey Plaza. I didn't know there was such a thing as a Ken Kesey Plaza. I like that. Back to your phone calls. Jake is calling from Arcata, California. Hey, Jake.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's going.
I'd like to talk about the war criminal in the White House and his hypocrisy today with his little veto. You know, if the Democrats, they just need to hold this guy's feet to the fire on this one. As your screener said earlier to me, the equivalent is masturbation is murder. Remember that old Monty Python song, Every Sperm is Sacred?
Oh, yeah. We play that every once in a while.
You know, I think you should play it for Bush's press conference. This was just ridiculous. How is it that this guy, who has murdered almost a million people in Iraq based on lies, based on avarice, based on fooling our troops into going over there and giving their lives for what? For Halliburton? For Exxon? This guy is going to complain about trying to cure diseases like, you know, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, you know, other degenerative diseases that could be cured. But, you know, Bush doesn't care about real live people. He cares about, you know, a clump of cells. The idea that he's going to equate a clump of cells with a real live human being who needs medical treatment, Bush is an idiot.
Well, there is that, and I certainly don't disagree with you, Jake, but also is the thing that I referred to earlier this last hour about Bush not necessarily being anti-stem cell research. Bush has no morals. He is an amoral human being. He has no morals one way or the other. He panders to a certain select group that he considers to be the base of this now dead and dying Republican Party, and that would be the Christian fundamentalists in this country who are utterly, absolutely, and unredemptively insane. But what Bush is after is more money for the private sector. That's the reason that he's saying, I think, and I agree with the person whose assessment of this I quoted earlier in the program, that's why Bush is trying to stymie or prevent public funding You know, most of the real serious, deep research is done at universities in this country, and then there are licensing fees paid to private corporations if discoveries are made. But Bush wants to eliminate everything. Remember, this bastard wants to privatize the military, so why wouldn't he want to privatize medical research? So I agree with you. He's simply a hypocritical slob who is pandering to this little clutch of religious fundamentalists whom he thinks still believe his BS. I got to leave it there, Jake. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us.
Every sperm is sacred. Every sperm is great. If a sperm is wasted.
It's hard for me in the, you know, living in the this beautiful White House, to give you an assessment, a first-hand assessment. I haven't been there. You have. I haven't.
Of his honor and his glory, the people would sing.
Twenty-five before the hour, quick email here from Judy about Palestine. I once saw a Palestinian film called The Olive Harvest, where the young men who had lost their jobs and their olive crop because of the occupation could only find work as construction workers building the Israeli settlers' houses. I haven't heard this from anyone or anywhere else. Have you heard anything like this about the film? No, I'm not familiar with the film, but that situation, sure. Take a look at the American occupation of Iraq. Where are Iraqis finding jobs? Building the American embassy. Judy goes on, as for rage fatigue, it is a constant feeling of helplessness and impotence that creeps over everything and everyone, even those who are not quite conscious of it. It pushes the national psyche into madness as the most outrageous, absurd, and violently disingenuous statements are eventually accepted as common, normal, and part of the national character. Makes one want to barf their organic veggies. Judy. I hear you, Judy. Back to your phone calls. Deborah is calling from Baltimore. Hey, Deborah, welcome to the program. Deborah?
Deborah!
All right, let's put her on hold and go to Rhonda, who is calling from San Francisco. Hey, Rhonda.
Hi. Hello.
Yes.
I listen to you pretty much every evening. I started listening to you when you were on Air America. I love your show.
Well, thank you.
I always, I kind of tell people, listen to your show because you just never know how long you're going to be on the air. I said, this guy is just way too radical. They are going to get rid of him. I hope not. I mean, I just love you because you're so honest.
Well, Air America got rid of me because I was too radical.
Well, you know, they've got a lot of, pseudo-liberals on there now.
Oh, my God. I still have friends who work there, but management is really turning the screw and has been for the past year. I also was way too outspoken to be on WLS in Chicago, way too outspoken to be on WSB in Atlanta. So, yeah, you're right. I sometimes worry about... job security, but you don't get into radio on any level if you're looking for job security. That's A. But B, I'm working for a company now that is, I think maybe I've found a home.
I'm glad because I like visiting your house every now and then.
Well, thank you.
You know, your screener said, what did you want to call about? Actually, I called because you said you had free lines, and I was like, oh, let me see if I can get through.
Right, there you
but,
go.
But can I, I'm supposed to talk about Pelosi and Feinstein, both my representatives here. And
well, if you want to change it, I won't tell Ian, who first talks to you when you call the program. If you want to change it, go ahead.
Actually, I would like to just suggest something that's a little off topic.
Go ahead.
But not so much, but I saw if I saw the most beautiful, beautiful movie yesterday. It's an Italian movie called The Golden Door. It's a story about an Italian, a Sicilian family immigrating to the United States at the turn of the century, the previous one.
Right.
It's the most beautiful movie. So if you're a listener.
The Golden Door?
The Golden Door. It's actually, I think it was made before 2007. It's being sponsored, it's kind of being presented to the United States by Martin Scorsese. And it's in Italian, some English. It's it's just an absolutely visually beautiful movie, and it's a beautiful story. I think it also, when I was watching it, it reminded me, it has issues about immigration insofar as it relates to what's going on now with the whole, quote, illegal immigration,
right.
Undocumented workers.
Right.
It's not politically, what is the word? It's not, its point, its intention isn't that, but there is some relation. And I do think that there is in this country, a lot of people who are children, grandchildren of immigrants, great-grandchildren of immigrants,
mm-hmm.
who are all, oh, America, this is our country. You know, get out of here, love it or leave it kind of people, you know,
mm-hmm.
the those people who hang out at the borders, nativists, so to speak. They should see this, because I think a lot of people forget that there is only one indigenous people in this country. And with the exception of black people who were brought here in chains, everyone is an immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this country, I'm going out on a limb here, but what's going on in Palestine, 60-year occupation?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. The Native Americans have been occupied, not for 60 years, but over 400 years. The only difference is that the Native Americans, the vast majority of them, were killed off, whereas the Palestinians, they have not been killed off. And also, it's during a time when there is visual evidence, and you can't, you know, they won't be able to have a mass murder of the Palestinians the way they did of Native Americans. But they're killing them off by the way they're being occupied, taking away water and land and their way of making a living and farming and such. So, you know, I'm really happy to get to talk to you, and I don't want to take up any more of your time rambling on.
Well, no, that's okay. Don't look at your call to this program as taking up my time. I'm glad you called. And as far as the Golden Door, I would love to see it, but remember, I live in the Atlanta area. When you live on the coasts, the West Coast or the East Coast, you have access to films when they first are released, or the so-called art films or foreign language films. Whereas here in the buckle of the Bible Belt, sometimes you know we're fortunate to get something like Sicko, that's you know, Michael Moore's movie. So
yes.
I hope the Golden Door comes here. If it does, we'll certainly check it out.
Before you hang up on me, there is one way that you can find out that it's being shown through the Landmark, Landmark Theater.
Oh, we have a Landmark.
Go to their website,
okay, yeah,
and you will see if it's in your city or if it's on its way.
We do.
We do have
one outlet for Landmark Theaters here in Atlanta, so I will check it out. Thanks for the tip, Rhonda.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Help me, Rhonda. I bet she hears that so much she could just gut the next person that says it to her. You think, Kathy? Gene is calling from Napa, California. Hey, Gene, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi, Mike. You know, sometimes you ask, what can we do? What should we do if we're feeling helpless and stuff?
Right.
And I have a suggestion.
Okay.
And what my suggestion is not that we should go to the Democrats hat in hand and say, oh, please give us back our Bill of Rights. Please reinstitute habeas corpus.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, oh, please. I think what we should do is take a stronger stance and get back more than we've lost. I think we should demand from them that they give us an even more than we've lost in terms of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights,
mm-hmm.
like the United Nations has.
Yes.
Or I'm reading this magnificent book, The Second Bill of Rights, FDR's Unfinished Revolution and Why We Need It More Than Ever, and the author is Cass Sunstein.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that this is the kind of thing we need to do. We need to demand more than we've lost. Let's get even with them.
Make
Hillary's hair will just stand on end.
Yeah, I certainly agree with what you're saying. And I'm still kind of hung up tonight on getting that information from Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, that when Netanyahu comes to the United States, he's going to meet with Cheney, Fred Thompson, the movie actor, and Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having hot flashes trying to understand what that means.
Well, the Clintons, the Clintonians, the DLC, they've already disappointed me. They disappointed me years ago with the WTO.
Yeah.
They just ripped the workers' rights away. I'm from blue collar background, and it's so unfair.
Yeah.
And there's just absolutely no excuse for what they did. You know, it was not a humane way to get to any kind of globalization.
Mm-hmm. Clinton certainly had the power. He's not the one who initiated the negotiations that brought about NAFTA, but he is the president, the U.S. president that was in power when it was signed by him. And he had the power, and he also had the moral authority at the time to have made sure that it was a fair trade bill and not free trade, so-called. Hey, listen, got to leave there. Thank you, Gene. It's good to hear from you. Take care, okay?
Thank you. Bye, Mike.
All right. Bye-bye. We're coming back one more time. I'm Mike Malloy. Drag them out here once again tonight. Bring them out. Come on, shuffle on stage, y'all. There's Ian Huff, who engineered the program from our flagship station in Phoenix, KPHX. He also answered your phone calls. Here comes Chris, our senior correspondent, Chris in Minnesota. Oh, there he is, Billy Foster, the moderator of NovemRadio.com chat room. And here comes a group that moderates the message board at MikeMalloy.com. And, there she is, Catherine Bay, the executive producer, she who must be obeyed. All right, whip them back into the shadows. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Don't forget, four more Glastonbury DVDs tomorrow night. We have time for more phone calls. I think we do. Bonnie is calling from Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Bonnie.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, thank you for all that you do, and I just wanted to call because, once again, there was a veto of the stem cell research.
Yeah.
And this is another disappointment. I have one son he's 18 and he's had diabetes since he was 3, and as anyone who knows about that disease knows, it's a daily struggle, and it's just hard to understand the lack of empathy, love, caring, for human beings that are walking on the earth, that have families, mm-hmm. dreams for their future. And I just, like any politician that might someday maybe overturn a veto or have that power to do that, to just stop and think, you know, maybe, you know, God forbid, maybe their son or daughter or grandchild might sometime be stricken with something that they might turn around and say, hey, you know, I had a chance to maybe do something that could have maybe changed this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really all I had to say. I've watched him, you know, I had hopes in the late 90s, and I watched what happened in 2000, and then it happened again, because, like, one of the first things he did was ruin it for the stem cell research. Then, it, you know, then what happened in 2004, and he's done it a couple of times, and again today. So, you know, it's just another disappointment, and, you know, this is something that, you know, I just hope someday can be turned around.
Bonnie, it will be. You know, our government, our science, our history is all in the hands of really thuggish people right now. And I can hear the pain in your voice, obviously. But it will change. Eventually, it will change. Did we lose Bonnie? I think we lost Bonnie. Bonnie, damn it. Must have been, I don't know if Bonnie was talking on a cell phone or whatever, but it will change. I don't know if it's going to change where it concerns, you know, justice and the democratic process, but it will change where it concerns science going back to the scientists and medical research going back to the medical researchers and the universities. That will happen. It simply will. It will. Time for one more. Joe is calling from Brookings, Oregon. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, I have exclusive information for your show. I know for a fact that the Republican ticket in 2008 is going to be Dick Cheney and Peter North. And the slogan will be, "Bend over, America." Now then.
Joe, who's Peter North?
Oh, well, I was talking to, you know, Kathy, your former call screener, and you know, I kind of thought maybe you would know who he was.
I have no idea.
Oh, well, okay, he would be the modern day equivalent of John Holmes. You know who John Holmes was, right?
Oh God, you are a very sick man. you Joe, how long have you been off the meds this time?
Oh, hey.
Do you know?
Hey, I'm talking to a brother there. You know,
you're the poster boy for national health care, especially where it concerns mental health. I swear to God, Joe. You know, there needs to be a picture of Joe with the caption underneath it that says "Send this boy to camp."
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you for the lovely thought.
Well, that's all right, Joe.
Anyway,
now what did you really call about?
Yeah, about
now that you've
about
slipped,
the
now that you
Boy Wonder in New York City.
Now
Mike
that
Bloomberg.
You've slipped all that terrible porno crap past me, go ahead. Now what? Mike Bloomberg, what about him?
Yeah, well, there was a little something Kathy told me, but I won't repeat it over there. Yes, the thing is about Mike Bloomberg, it's funny how these right-wing nuts are going crazy about him. They're going crazy about him. They're saying, well, that Mike Bloomberg never really was a Republican, he was a liberal Democrat all along, and yet they claim that, oh, he's going to be a spoiler. He's going to spoil Rudy Giuliani's chances being elected president. How's this supposed to be if he's such a liberal Democrat? And the thing is about Mike Bloomberg, which to me is kind of, it would be delicious irony if he did get elected president, and some people throwing out the figure, oh, you know, maybe he could spend like $1 billion of his own money and get elected president. That would be the only way you would ever see campaign finance reform, is if a guy like that spent $1 billion of his own money, got elected as an independent. Then all of a sudden people would say, the Democrats and the Republicans would say, oh my God, look at the evil and influence of money and politics. We got to do something about this right away.
Okay. Thanks, Joe. Well, I would love to take the remaining calls, but we just don't have time. And John in Detroit, who wanted to talk about immigration, you know, I'm willing to take on that subject. I've stayed away from it because I've been astonished by how this particular issue has been changed into another wedge issue. But if you want to talk about tomorrow night, John, give us a call before, you know, right before, certainly before it's time to leave, right? Thanks for participating in the program tonight, however you did that, even you, Ira. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.